Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go hook him up!
I would attack you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Katrera. What's going on, Katrera?
Not much. What's going on?
Not too much. We're just, this week it's a little different. Instead of you being late, Craig texted me saying he's going to be a few minutes late, so hopefully it won't take him too long to get on the air.
Well, normally I don't text you to tell you I'm being late, so that's something new.
But we are, until Craig gets here, we are also joined by returning to the show after her awesome performance on the WrestleMania review show, and that is the lovely Sherry. How are you doing today, Sherry?
Hi, I'm good. Hello, everybody.
Cool. And, I guess we'll wait till we start the review till Craig gets on. So, basically, we'll just small talk until then. Katrera, how's your week going? I think you said you were out of town, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I had an uncle unexpectedly die this week, so I'm out of town. So I'm probably going to cut out about 9 o'clock. So.
Okay. Well, where are you at?
I am in a hotel room in Monroe, Louisiana. So.
Then you're not far from Rodney, dude.
I know. He should come see me, right?
Yeah, I think he's in Monroe, or wherever he's at, it starts with an M. So you should tell him to pick you up on the way down town after your thing.
Yeah, he's quite a ways from me, though, so I don't think I can fit him into the schedule.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure he doesn't want to hang out with a known racist like you.
I'm not a known racist. I'm an undercover racist.
Well, speaking of, like, racism, well, not speaking of racism, but speaking, apparently, I don't know if you heard this, apparently we have now interviewed two child molesters on this show.
Yes, I was going to bring that up, actually. At least the second one we didn't book. The first one we didn't book.
At least we did not call Steve Gatorwolf. Steve Gatorwolf actually called us.
Yes.
Now, Buck Sumoff, that we can blame on Craig.
Yes. Thankfully, I wasn't there for that interview.
I was like, God damn, dude. How is it that we've interviewed two child molesters, dude? That's just so wrong.
They find us.
Yeah.
I don't know what the deal is.
But, Sherry, I think you just recently got the network. How are you enjoying the network? I'm curious because I'm wondering how many, like, women, like, got the network on their own and, you know.
Like a big girl? Yeah, I got the network all by myself. I really enjoy it. It's been wonderful. I don't see why not everybody has it. It's really useful. I mean, it's sad that you can't see, you know, Raw and SmackDown on it, but it's one of those things of, you know, you can see those on the other channels and then flip back and get all of the pre-show and post-show interviews and commentary and everything. That's the stuff that I like. So the network is really useful for that. Plus, you get to see the NXT. You've got the original series Legends House. You've got all of the pay-per-views. You know, you've got everything stored in their little archives, so you can watch all these great, you know, special features and old matches and main event as well. It's pretty fun. It's wonderful. It's hours and hours of entertainment.
Now, have you seen the Legends House when you went to Vegas and started tripping?
Well, I heard like two people talking. What? What was the question?
I said, have you seen the Legends House where there was the new one where they went to Vegas and started tripping?
They were the Chippendale dancers. Yes, I did see that. That was wonderful.
How was their performance? I haven't seen that one yet.
They did okay. They did great. They did a good job.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They gave
it
their
like
best.
Tony Ellis and Hacksaw are going to go at it at some point. So
yeah,
I don't know what the deal is there.
It's been wonderful. I highly suggest people getting the network. You know, it's a lot. There's a lot on it. And like I said, like I was able to watch Extreme Rules. I missed it when it was actually on because I was performing, so I wasn't at home. But then I was able to come back that night and watch it, and I've actually been able to watch it a couple more times just to kind of catch up and refresh and also catch things that I thought I missed throughout the week because it stays on there. So you're able to do that and watch also the pre-show and the post-show. So it's really useful if you want to refresh and be able to watch it multiple times.
Well, we are finally joined by a very unprofessional other co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, everyone.
Craig,
he
sounds
so miserable when he gets on the show. He sounds so miserable.
Just today,
I'm sorry.
You can
leave.
I apologize.
He just doesn't want to review the pay-per-view again, I guess.
Well, if I heard his review the other night, I don't think I want to listen to his review again. So,
yeah, I figured he'd be in the minority. But we'll go ahead and I guess, Craig, do you have the list of the matches in order?
Give me just a second. I just got to my folks' house, and I'm on my iPad, so everything's going to take a lot longer than it usually
first
does.
First match was the pre-show match with the WLC match.
There we go.
Okay, well, I want to speak on the WLC match first because I think this past Sunday night, the WWE had the greatest match in the history of not only the WWE, but of all pro wrestling in all the world. I was highly entertained. That shit made me laugh my ass off, and fucking 5 stars.
I guess
well, that's one way to look at it.
Since it's a 5-star match. Is it in the Observer under 5 stars?
It should be under 5. It should be under 5. If they didn't make that a 5-star match, Dave lost all credibility with me.
I'm pretty sure there's a negative for the star rating that Dave gave it. I'm not sure, though.
Oh, okay. Dave's out of his mind. That match was all I could ever hope for and 10 times more.
I mean, how could you not see them?
They had a freaking Wii ring announcer, a Wii referee, a Wii announce table, a Wii Michael Cole, a Wii Jerry Lawler, a Wii JBL. The only thing missing was a Wii Spanish announce table.
I still haven't actually seen this.
It was an entertaining match, to say the least. Especially with everybody that they put into it, you know, having, you know, the wee little commentators and everything, and then having the little tables and little chairs and little ladders for them to use as opposed to the regular tables and chairs.
What was funny is besides, you know, there was like, of course, a lot of comedy. That's, you know, basically what WWE midget matches are. But as far as all the comedy, it was probably one of the most dangerous matches they've done in years, you know, since probably like Joey Mercury broke his face.
They had, you know, they had Hornswoggle jumping off of ladders and, you know, El Torito bouncing around. And it was definitely entertaining. I mean, it's one of those things of, like, I think the most entertaining bits is El Torito, you know, just kind of egging on Hornswoggle to fight him as opposed to the actual fight itself, because it was kind of one-sided.
Katrina, what did you think of the match?
I didn't see it.
You didn't see it?
I just said I didn't see it.
How did you not see it? Is it not on the replay?
It's on the pre-show on the.
It's not a replay I want to watch, so. Not one of those
things. Oh my god, you don't know what the fuck you're missing.
Well, I'm sorry. I just don't do. I normally don't do the pre-show stuff, and I'm sorry. I'm not into the little people. Or whatever you call them.
Yeah, you're racist against the little people like you are against the black people, dude.
God.
Man.
I don't know why I do this show. I just... you know,
Craig,
put me
Craig
down.
We already heard you talk about another show, but why don't you go ahead and give it to us here.
Yeah, didn't see it. But I do want to reiterate that the WWE Network is the greatest thing ever, because as I was driving to Brian's house, Vinny watched it in the car while I was traveling down I-5 and plugged my phone into my car speakers. I heard the commentary as Vinny cackled as I was driving down the road. But anyway, so main show.
Well, let me say real quick, apparently there was a big deal because one of the announcers had taken a picture at the announce table before the show, and in the background you see John Cena sitting there with the Wyatts talking over the match.
Yep. That happened.
He will not be as bad.
That was an awesome pick. It's funny because I saw that all over Twitter, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then it's like I must have seen it like 20 times before I finally zeroed in and like, oh, shit. Now, Craig, give us your son's review of this match.
Oh, well, he wasn't listening. But he actually watched it while I was at Brian's, and then when I picked him up for school the next day, because I got home late in the evening, I picked him up for school, and I said, how'd you like the pay-per-view, son? And he goes, it was pretty cool. I said, how'd you like the minis? And he goes, I haven't watched it yet. And I said, oh. So when we got home, he grabs my iPad, as he often does, and I hear him cackling in the other room, just howling with laughter and making all kinds of noise. And I go in there and I said, what are you watching? He goes, I'm watching the minis match, Dad. It's awesome. And so there's your review.
Well, your son has better taste than you. Well, you know, you actually, I guess you gave it a thumbs up, right?
I haven't seen it yet. Like I said, I will. The highlights I saw were pretty spectacular, I'll tell you that. So,
yeah. Well, once you see the match, yeah. It is 10 times better than just the highlights. It was awesome. I can't believe you guys missed the greatest pre-show of all time, and you guys missed.
I don't know if it would be the greatest pre-show, but it
was
entertaining.
No, it wasn't the greatest pre-show of all time.
You exaggerate a lot.
Okay.
I'm actually telling the truth this time.
Okay.
Well, we do think it is the last night. Let's move on.
Yeah, isn't Lance calling
all
me?
All right,
what
was the
match? The match was RVD, Jack Swagger, and Cesaro.
Okay. This match is where Brian Alvarez made himself look like to be the biggest dumbass in the entire world, and then he has the goal to call me an idiot. Okay. I'm not the one who went on Wrestling Observer Live and told everybody what the match was, what the rules of the match were, only to have the stupid Michael Cole and JBL and them not know what it is, and then have them retroate what they said the rules were. After he had already said what the rules were, went back and changed them, and then had to go back later and say that, oh, we were wrong. The rules were right the first time, and it's like, hello, you look like the idiot, not me. Okay. But the match was pretty good. I mean, you know, except for the confusion with when Swagger got pinned and Michael Cole and them not knowing what the hell was going on. It's like, how do you not tell the announcer what the hell's going on? But, you know, I thought it was a decent match. It wasn't like anything great or anything, but, I mean, it was decent. I thought Cesaro looked good, and, you know, it was. I give it a thumbs up, but like I say, it wasn't nothing great or nothing to write home about.
Agreed. I liked most of the pay-per-view up until the Cena match, and I stand by that. After going back and rewatching the Daniel Bryan Kane match, I thought I was missing something. I gave that match a little bit of a higher mark than I did on the first show I did. I didn't mind this match at all. Number one, they put Cesaro over big. The botched finish that actually, as I later found out, Jack Swagger was supposed to kick out of the Frog Star Splash. Five-star Frog Splash. But he was supposed to kick out, so there was a faux pas there. They weren't good. Cesaro looked like a million bucks, and his star continues to rise.
Where do you get saying that it was a mess of him kicking out of the five-star Frog Splash? Who kicks out of the five-star Frog Splash? I seriously doubt Jack Swagger, of all people, would be one of the first people to kick out of the five-star Frog Splash. I think that Brian Alvarez trying to cover his own ass.
As I was sitting in Brian's living room, Brian gets a text, and it says he was supposed to kick out. So
Maybe there's supposed to be a save.
But Jack Swagger did not kick out. He did not move his shoulder. He didn't even move a muscle as the ref was counting three. So put that on whomever you may. Brian got a text from somebody, you know, where he gets his info from, and apparently Swagger was supposed to kick out of that.
Sure. What did you think of that match if you saw it?
This is a fine match. Cesaro went over as he should. They need to do some with his music, though.
Absolutely.
I liked his old music better. It's a lot better.
Yes.
That siren and whatever, that just don't seem to fit. Terrible.
Yeah, I totally agree on the music. I mean, it just, to me, it sounds like a cheap knockoff.
And is it clear to everybody else that there's going to be a build-up to him just telling Paul Heyman to shut the fuck up about Brock Lesnar or something? That's the way it seems to me. Because he mentions this every time he comes out for his matches. So I don't know. Might not be a long association with those two.
Yeah, probably by SummerSlam, I'm sure it'll be over. But, Sherry, what did you
think? You're not going to react to Cesaro because you think he's supposed to be a babyface, but now he's got like one of the biggest heels in the company with him, so it's strange.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Sherry.
I enjoyed this match. I really enjoy it. Cesaro and Paul's dynamic, and Cesaro is definitely a rising star. He, you know, I think we're looking at a future, you know, heavyweight champion. I really think that he's going to rise up and soon. Jack Swagger, I mean, you know, I can kind of see where he was supposed to kick out of that, because, I mean, with all the confusion and everything, they probably thought that he was supposed to kick out, and we're probably going with it as planned. So I have to say that, yeah, it looked like he was supposed to kick out of that, and ended up not, and ended up costing himself, you know, a longer chance in the match. But I think regardless of if he would have stayed in or not, I believe Cesaro was going to come out on top of this regardless. And, you know, Paul always backs a really good opponent. Oh, did you hear that Brock Lesnar defeated the streak? I didn't know if that was news. but yeah, I really enjoyed this match. Cesaro's strong. It's, you know, and it was good to see you know, RVD rolling around and doing his jumps and his, you know, high flying stuff. It was nice to see him back. It seems like he's just going to keep bringing the show, regardless of his winning or losing. He's just going to keep bringing it. And he got hurt. He got a little bit of a cut. I watched the interview afterwards, and he got a little bit of a cut from that trash can.
Yeah, he kicked the trash can right through the face, it seemed like, because he was messed up on Raw.
I think that was pulling shut a little bit, so I'm
just about.
Yeah, it cut him right, you know, right towards the eye. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not like he hadn't done
it. I love Cesaro's music. I like the sirens. Yeah.
Oh, you're the one then.
Yeah, I'm the one.
Yeah. It's okay for RVD to shed a little blood, because I remember back in the day when he first started in WWE, where like every week he kept fucking hard weight Kurt Angle.
True. And his wife flipped out on the internet about it. Writing stuff about him, but I always give him a potato in him in the ring. So.
Just in case Lance calls in before we're done with the review, let's go ahead and jump to the main matches, just that way we don't cut them off instead of the other ones.
Yeah.
So we'll go straight to what was probably the second best match of the night after the WLC, and that was the Shield versus the Wyatt family. And this is almost as good as the Firecracker Spectacular in Fort Worth, Texas, between the Von Erichs and the Freebirds on 4th of July. Almost as good, not quite. But damn, was it one hell of a good match. I mean, I'm just freaking out how good that the Shield is as babyfaces. I mean, I figured Reigns was going to be awesome, but freaking Seth is just a ball of fire. And I still can't get over how good freaking how good John Moxley is as a babyface. I mean, it just blows my mind how good he is. But I highly enjoyed this match. It was awesome, and it was cool that Shield got put over strong and clean at the end. And yeah, it was great. What did you think of Trev?
I thought they were facing Evolution first thing, and not the Wyatt family, as you said earlier.
Oh. Yes. I'm sorry. I
may need to break your show. Yeah, this was great. This was the best match on the show that I saw. Apparently, there was one better in the pre-show. But, I don't know why they're having a rematch. I mean, since they went over, I mean, it made much sense to me to have a rematch with those guys since the babyfaces went over, and it was just for the other guys to get the win back. So.
I don't think that was the plan when they won, but then when they decided to keep Batista, but Batista didn't want to do the title program, they kind of were forced into it. At least we know it'll be a good match on the next one, since the first one was so good.
And I got to sit through a Buried Alive match. I'd rather gnaw my arm off than watch a Buried Alive match.
Yeah, I as much as, you know, I think Daniel Bryan is bulletproof, and I don't mind most of the stuff they do. The stuff they did on Monday was
pretty good. Let's do a match with that always sucks. And it always sucks.
Yeah.
You remember, that match did get Terry Gordy one of his last big paydays.
Well.
If you remember when he had the mask and he hit the Undertaker.
Well, the business that they're having to be a part of that match. That's probably why he quit. And died shortly after.
And then he looked like Terry Gordy by that time. But, Craig, I guess, you know, you that was your favorite match of the show, no doubt.
Oh, it was absolutely spectacular. Just great heat. It's kind of hard to do a tag match when it goes so long like that, and to get basically you do a double heat spot where they got heat on Seth for a bit and then they got heat on Ambrose for a bit. And as you said, Dean Ambrose, babyface in peril, is not something I thought I'd ever see. And I saw it on this match and also on the SmackDown before in that four-way, which was actually very good. And, they're just a great team. And I don't ever want to see them break up, but I know they're going to sometime. But, yeah, they're just tremendous as a team. And Evolution brought it.
It was just a great match. Just absolutely spectacular.
Sherry, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love this match. This was, you know, it definitely, you know, was one of the best matches that I've seen in a while. And to see the Shield and Evolution finally come head-to-head, you know, and you're seeing, you know, the rising stars, and you're seeing a huge transition just in general of everything in the WWE, of all of the new talent coming in. And I really think that this is, you know, setting in place for other people to slowly step down. And Evolution brought it. The Shield was great. You know, Seth flying off from in the crowd, taking down, you know, Triple H and Orton along with Dean. You know, but they're strong. You know, seeing Roman, you know, his fears are just, they're lethal, and it's great to see him take down a giant like Batista. You know, and if you have the network, if I can plug it anymore, they had these great interviews in the post show, and the Shield did a great interview of saying the reason why they're stronger than Evolution, because they're actually a team. You know, in Evolution itself, you've got, you know, somebody running a multi-billion-dollar corporation, another person off doing movies, and then Randy just being whatever he is. And, you know, they come together, but they're not always together. So there's not that trust and chemistry there. Whereas the Shield, yeah, they're strong. And I don't want to ever see them break up. That was a great match. It was definitely on fire. And they should do it again on Payback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and hopefully they'll do a little more. The thing that surprised me about the dive is I kind of knew the dive was coming, but it came from the other side. So I kept looking at the other side of the screen, and then he came flying in from the right because, mm-hmm. you know, they had left him on the other side. So that was it made me pop just because it caught me by surprise.
I do have to say the ring and the commentary, the commentator, JBL and all them, were messing up so much. Like, just their words and everything, they messed up a lot in this, like, in the entire pay-per-view together. Like, they were using a lot of, I think at one point they were talking about Wyatt being a contortionist, and instead they said extortionist. And I was like, and then finally they corrected themselves, so they had to correct themselves a lot. On the pay-per-view, they had to correct themselves a lot. So, just a little tidbit on the announcers.
Yeah, they should have just let Michael Cole and Jerry the King Smaller and JBL just call
JBL.
The whole
thing.
Yeah. I did one thing that I did notice, and that I love this guy's gimmick is I don't know if you guys noticed that they got Ricardo doing the Spanish announcing. And every time the wrestlers come near the Spanish announce table, he starts pointing and waving to the other table. It's fucking awesome. But
they should have closed the show with this match.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of people were saying,
yeah.
like, they were Daniel Bryan be, you know, kind of be putting, like, on a, you know, secondary or whatever, and they wanted Brian to close the show, but this match should close the show. Looking back now,
in a way you're right, but in another way, then we'd have to be listening to all these people bitch about Brian being buried, and you know.
Actually,
either
I don't
way,
know if they
would have
said that because
of way or another.
But just because of the quality of the Evolution match, I don't think people would have been that negative about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That should have finished it. I feel like that would have been a even bigger. You know, finale, if you had, you know, the six-man match at the last.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was hard for anyone to top. It was, no one was going to top it. That's the one thing. But I, in a way, I do like Brian being last because it shows that they're kind of behind him and not giving him the CM Punk treatment about not finishing the shows. But we'll move on to the cage match. And, Couture, what did you think of the cage match?
I thought it was stupid.
Okay, then
best review ever.
I just thought it was stupid. I mean, there's so much, all this interference in a cage match, and I know it's kind of like past time, but when, you know, cage matches were just to keep out interference and whatever. And then the finish when friggin' Isaac from Children of the Corn shows up with the distorted voice. I expected him saying that he wants you to, Malachi, you know, that the whatever, you know, in Children of the Corn, whatever the gods they were praying to or whatever goofiness, expected that. And I don't know. I like the kids' choir the previous Monday, but this was a little bit too over the top for me. So.
Well, he just messed me. He's going to call in 1 second, but I have to ask one question. Did you like this cage match better or worse than the Bret Hart Owen Hart match?
Bret and Owen was better.
Yeah.
Really? Because I actually think this one was better because the Owen and Bret one just got on my nerves. But I don't want to keep our guests on hold for too long here. So, Craig, can you introduce our guest, please?
I'd be more than happy to, Ed. I actually didn't need to write a introduction for Mr. Storm because he needs none. But I wanted to give him a compliment, as I told him on Twitter just a while back. I have much respect for Lance Storm because I listen to lots and lots of wrestling podcasts, and everybody from Chris Jericho, Pauly Dangerously, to good old JR. Nobody ever has anything bad to say about this man. And I think he's a class act, and Lance, I want to thank you. Nobody ever says anything bad about Lance Storm.
Well, maybe you should just thank all them for lying and putting me over.
Maybe so.
Yeah, wrestling is a work, Craig.
But thanks for the introduction, Craig.
You betcha.
Okay. Before we get going, Sherry, if you need to go, you can go, but you're welcome to join us if you'd like to, since Couture is probably leaving pretty soon.
I would love to stay, but I have to go to my next performance. So, goodbye.
Thank you.
Lance. It's an honor
to
hear. And goodbye, everybody.
Okay, bye-bye. I'll talk to you soon. Okay, Katrina, before you get to go, why don't we go ahead and let you draw out some questions to Lance.
Yeah, Lance, I was, you know, it came up in the last week's Figure Four about David Benoit making his wrestling debut, and I think your name came up as maybe you've done some stuff at your school. What's the status of all that? Do you know what's going on with that?
I don't know what the current status is. I know he was advertised to make his debut. I believe there's a few people that don't think he's ready and shouldn't be on the show. I don't know if he's been decided not to do it, or he's been canceled or pulled or what. I've been talking to him off and on for quite a while about training, and he did eventually, it was my past January session he started with, but then after a couple of weeks, things came up, and he stopped training with me. So he had 2 weeks with me. I don't think he's done any other training. He may have done a little bit. Maybe he was, you know, in a ring once or twice with Harry. I'm not sure, but he is, to the best of my knowledge, not ready to have a match. And if he was being promoted to be making his debut, I think it was a case of them wanting to be able to advertise the debut of the son of Chris Benoit more than he was ready for his first match, and they were giving him a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who was the promoter? Was it is that one of the Teddy Hart shows, or was that one of the one of Bret's brothers that was promoting the show?
I believe. It's run under the Hart Legacy banner, which, again, is whether it was before partially Teddy Hart's deal, again, depending on who you talk to, it was or it wasn't. But it's, I believe it's a lady named Stacy Angel and Smith Hart that are running it, I think. And I believe Smith is the oldest of the Hart boys, I believe. But I'm not positive about Stacy Angel, but I am pretty sure that it is her and Smith that were running the show under the Hart Legacy name. But again, I'm not 100% sure on that, other than I know Smith was the one that was promoting on Facebook or Twitter, one or the other, that it was going to be David's debut.
Real quick on Teddy Hart. I know you had worked one of those shows a while back. Did he have his cat there with him?
I don't remember, but I would imagine so. He doesn't usually go too far without his cats. And again, he wasn't wrestling with the cats, I don't believe. I don't think they were at ringside with him, but that's possible too. You don't usually get
have
too
you,
far away.
Have you heard about his new gimmick?
His new what?
His new gimmick that he does with the cat. He brings the cat to the ring with him now. He puts it on a turnbuckle, and the cat stays there the whole match.
Well, again, Teddy runs to the beat of his own drum.
And for people who don't believe me, one of the guys from the Mania trip went to the Dragon's Gate show. I guess it was the Dragon's Gate show,
yep.
And took a picture. And there's this cat while there's action going on, just sitting there on top of the turnbuckle, looking like, "What the hell's going on?" yeah, that was.
I guess you'd have to be careful not to take a turnbuckle in that corner.
But going back to Daniel Benoit,
David Benoit.
David
last week. Regarding his son, we were talking about it last week, and what are the chances that one of, like, WWE would actually give him a chance? I mean, do you think he's kind of doomed just because of the name and relationship, or do you think in enough time will pass in a few years to where maybe they will give him a chance if he continues and trains and becomes good enough?
I don't know. I think Japan would give him a chance, and I think Mexico would give him a chance, but I'm not sure WWE would. Just that I don't think it's a name and a conversation they want to bring up. And, you know, it's like he looks enough like his dad. And it's a shame because, you know, it's baggage the kid doesn't deserve. You know what I mean? It's like he should be able to do what he wants and be judged on himself, but I'm not entirely sure they would. Now, granted, who knows what it's like in 5 years, 2 years. There's no real way of saying, but I would doubt it. I would think that it would be a negative at least that they just know that conversation is going to come up, and I don't know if they'd want to have it on their show. So who knows? Now, granted, I believe they've left Benoit footage on the network just with the disclaimer, so maybe that's moving in the direction that they're, you know, not willing to at least acknowledge the name. I don't know. But I would think Japan, based off of Chris's career in Japan, they'd be willing to give David a try. I don't know that for a fact, but I would think that they would.
Couture, if you want to get any more before you have to go ahead.
No, I need to go on and run, so that's all I wanted to ask. Good talking to Lance. I got to go, but...
I get on the show and everybody just flees.
Yeah. Well, yeah, pretty much. Okay. Anyway, I'll talk to you guys next week, okay?
Okay. Well, Craig, we'll let you go ahead and jump in then.
So, with David in the ring, what is he missing? As as you've been asked so many times.
I'm sorry. Who's missing what?
Benoit, the kid.
Well, again, he was with me for 2 weeks. You don't have enough time to tell where they're going too much. You know, we covered your basic bumps and a few basic holds and so forth. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, he had some. Things in his life that came up that he stopped training, and again, you'll have to get his reasons and rationales from him. So, but he was there for 2 weeks. He wasn't a, oh my God, this guy's a prodigy, but he was doing okay. And whether he can succeed at doing this job will really depend on how much he wants to work at something moving forward, and if he does. And at that point, you know, if he can get, again, a few months of training in and then get booked on shows, and time will tell. But he certainly wasn't with me long enough for me to really get a grip on how much potential he had.
You didn't see potential? Or did you? Or?
Well, again, there was certainly... He was picking it up well enough and moving along. Again, and he wasn't the, holy crap, this kid's definitely got it. But,
right.
You know, very few people are like that. And there's a lot of people that aren't like that that end up being good.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see enough of him to really know how far he'd be able to go.
Gotcha.
Well, for my first question, Lance, I have to ask, because for some reason it's never, ever been brought up on the Brian interviews, and that is, how did you enjoy doing your first movie gig, and how did that, how did you get the part to be in a movie?
It was, God, how long ago now? A few months ago. There's still lots of snow on the ground when it happened, so. For those who don't know, it was an independent film being shot here in Calgary called Painkillers with, I think the lead guy was Colin Fior I'm not positive.
Colin
something
Farrell?
Like that. No, not Colin Farrell. Fjorn or Fiori or something. An odd name. You'd recognize the face if you saw him. I certainly did. He was the lead guy in it, and Tammo Pinnicott, the guy that was Hilo in Battlestar Galactica, which is why Ed cares so much, was in the film as well. And they were looking for a big guy to play. I think he was an orderly in a hospital that was nicknamed Sasquatch. He was supposed to be a big guy. And I guess the casting director lady reached out to one of the local wrestling promoters saying, we're looking for big guys. And he threw my name out there just as well. You know, he's not really as tall as you're looking for, but he's a big guy. So my name just got thrown into the hat. And so she reached out to me, and she was also looking to contact another one of my former students who was really tall. So I put her in touch with him, and she says, why don't you come down and read for the part too? So I went down and read for the part of Sasquatch. I told Brian, I'm going to read for the part of Sasquatch. It turns out it was just a nickname for the character. And it was funny because when they sent me the lines to read that I would have to read that day, in the bit that they sent me, it didn't say whether this was some dumbass sci-fi movie and I was actually a Sasquatch that talked and worked as an orderly in a hospital, or whether it was a nickname and I was just supposed to be a big guy that everybody called Sasquatch. So when I got to the audition, the reading, that was the first question I asked. I'm like, is this just a dude nicknamed Sasquatch, or am I actually supposed to be a Sasquatch? But it was just a nickname. So I read for that part, and the lady even said, she says, you know, you're probably too short, but they want you to read just so they can see you. They might consider you for something else. And turns out the stunt coordinator on the film is a bit of a wrestling fan and has worked with, he's worked with Paul Lazenby before, who's a buddy of mine, and a few other wrestlers. I think he did stunt coordinating on one of Austin's movies. So he knew who I was, and I guess when he heard my name or saw my bit, he decided that, you know, he could use me for one of these stunt acting roles. So it was thanks to him that I got picked to be a big guard. There was a few guards in this hospital, and they needed one that was a little bit bigger than normal, I guess. So I got selected for big guard. I didn't have any lines, but I did have a fight scene with, fight scene being fairly generous. It was probably not more than 30 seconds, and I got beat up by Tammo Pinnicott, which was really cool. So it was, again, probably not more than a one-minute scene, and we did probably a couple dozen or 15 or 20 takes of the whole thing the one day. It was about a four-hour shoot. That was a lot of fun. I haven't heard any more about the film. I believe it was going to be playing at whether it's the Toronto International Film Festival or one of those type of things. And then I guess depending on how well it's screened there, it'll either be a movie release, a TV release, a DVD release, or a Netflix release or something. I would imagine at some point in time it'll be available to see. And then I'll get to see my big movie debut.
Now, what kind of fighting were you guys doing? Like, how was the action? I mean, were you just basically bumping around for him, or, like, did you at least get some moves in?
No, I didn't get any offense in. I pretty much got my butt kicked. It was just the thing that was really nice, and this is what I was happy with, that there's always the possibility that you just end up on the cutting room floor and you're not in the film. But from what I could tell from the film, this was sort of an escape scene. It's like, this seems to be important to the plot. It's like, he's, you know, handcuffed to a chair, and the, I believe we were the bad guys that had him, so to speak, and headbutting me in the face and then beating the shit out of me and choking me unconscious led to his escape. It's like, okay, I don't think they can cut this out. So it was fun, yeah. It was just a headbutt in the face, a nice elbow to the face, and then he choked me out, and that was it. But it was nice, too, because,
yeah,
again, the stunt coordinator, again, because he was a bit of a wrestling fan and a good guy, I think originally it was just going to be, you know, headbutt in the face and I'm out, and it's like he managed to stretch it out a few more seconds and got an extra move or two in, so that was fun. But it was neat to do all of the different takes. That, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to have the camera sitting here. We'll do this four or five times. And it's okay, then we have to move the camera over here and then do it again four or five more times. And then, okay, well, now we need to change the way you're looking and we'll do another four or five times. So it was a lot of fun. And Tambo's a really cool guy, really nice. And the one thing that I thought was funny, because I'm always the detail guy. And even in wrestling, it's like I always dot my T's and cross my I's, and I'm always looking out for everybody. They had a stunt double for the one nurse in the scene. And, again, from the one side, we do it with the stunt nurse, who I guess was just a little bit smaller than the other one or, you know, worked lighter than the other girl, I guess. But there's a point where Tammo in the chair is supposed to shove the girl off with his feet. And we did it with the stunt girl, and every time it was fine. And then we did move the cameras, I guess they needed to see the girl's face, so they put the real actress in. And whenever he pushed her, his chair would slide, and it'd screw up the shot. And the first time they did it, he's like, why is my chair sliding? And I'm the one that pipes up, and it's like, I've never done a film before, and there's a director there, and there's camera people there. And I'm like, because when he headbutts me in the face, he throws his head back and breaks my nose. And I take the bump, and I'm behind him. I'm like, I'm just taking the bump behind him. I can always just plant my foot at the base of his chair. No one's going to see it. And I'll hold his chair for him. And they're like, oh, that'd be great. I'm like, all right. So it's like, take the bump. And it's little things that you see in wrestling where it's like, you know, you'll take the bump. It's like, well, he's climbing the ladder. I'll just make sure I hook my foot into it and hold it steady for him. So it's like, you know, I'll brace the chair. He'll do his spot, and then everything will be good. And they're like, oh, that's awesome. Thanks.
That's cool. I find it funny that Hilo has now kicked your ass and Paulie's in these ass.
There you go. Well, he's probably not alone in that. There's probably a few people that have.
Well, I think basically that's what Paul gets paid for, is just to get his ass kicked on in the movies. I mean, basically, I mean, I'll never forget the one Stone Cold movie where he had a, but basically it was FaceTime getting his ass pushed in.
Well, the thing is, though, if you go back and look, Paul's wrestling career was pretty much him getting paid to get his ass kicked. Then he got into pancrase and mixed martial arts in Japan, and he was pretty much getting paid to get his ass kicked. So now that he's in film, he might as well just get paid to get his ass kicked again.
I got to give one credit for that one outside galactic scene. He did kind of steal the show when he took that punch into the corner and the bump out of it. I mean, that was actually pretty impressive.
Well, again, he's good at his job. As much as I want to rib him for getting his ass kicked, he does it well.
Craig, go ahead, Craig.
I was just going to say, one time I did see Paul actually get paid a little bit more to kick somebody's butt. So. But that's another story for another time that we've all heard before.
Yeah, I think Alvarez is the only guy Paul's got an offense on.
Possibly.
When he pantsed him at the Cloverdale show.
Yes.
He could have got a bonus for that, too.
I was there cackling in the corner with Matt Farmer, actually.
Perfect.
So, did you enjoy your time at the movies? Is it something else, something you want to do more of, or is this just a one-time deal?
Probably just a one-time deal, because it's not like I can go out and pursue things. You know, I have a full-time gig. And even when the lady contacted me, you know, I even told her, it's like, unless it's just evenings and weekends, it's like, I've got a full-time job. You know, I run my school. And so even when I went down and read, I'm like, this is really the only time I'm available. And she says, well, you know, if it was just a one-day shoot, could you clear one day? I'm like, well, yeah, I could clear one day. So that was the whole thing. It's like, this is only one scene. We can do it in one day, so we'll book them for one day. But I really can't, again, make the effort to, hey, I'm going to try to pursue acting or I'm going to try to pursue stunt work, because SWA is a full-time commitment. Even if it's not full-time, it's 5 days a week, even if it is only half days. So it's not something I could do. I'd certainly be open to and thrilled to death if there was the chance to do another little, you know, stunt work bit part or something. But if it was something I was going to pursue, you know, it's like, okay, there's going to be acting classes, there's going to be going out and reading and doing auditions, and it's like, I don't have time for that. Yeah. But I certainly enjoyed it.
Fair enough. And of course,
I wanted to ask you a question, Lance, because when I went to WrestleMania a few weeks ago, I actually had the pleasure of meeting two of your students. And the first one, Mr. Jack Jameson, a really nice guy, awesome dude. But how in the world could you name him after me? He looks nothing like me.
Yeah, you're probably the only one that thinks that. But again, he was a – actually, I think you both have beards now, too. But again, he's a heavyset, half Mexican, half Texan. What, it's like, what more do you want, Ed? As soon as I saw him, you were the first person I thought of.
How was he when he was going through training? Because I actually haven't seen him wrestle yet. I'm just like, I'm like that man that one day, but I haven't seen him wrestle. How was he in training?
Again, I remember him being pretty decent. It was a while ago, and I put a lot of students through. Really great guy, really worked hard. I believe, again, I'm pretty sure, again, my memory's terrible, that he had a lot of personality and was entertaining in that way. Again, he's not going to give you an Adrian Neville match. Again, I would imagine he's doing quite well, and he seems to be booked a fair bit. So if you do get a chance to see him, I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, hopefully he does wrestle in Austin quite a bit, so I'm hoping I can make it out there for one of the shows eventually.
Who was the other student you met?
The selfie guy, Tyler Breeze.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we ran into him and a few of the other guys late after WrestleMania on Frenchman Street, which is kind of like the local Bourbon Street. And I was pretty drunk when I met him. We all said like hello to him and stuff, and then I kind of just mentioned, like, hey, I know your trainer. And he's like, really? I go, yeah, I know Lance. And he's like, he just kind of gave me the look like, yeah, how well do you know Lance? Like, I was full of shit. But I was like, I kind of know him a little bit. And stuff. But he was actually super cool. I mean, he was real cool
guy.
To all of us.
Yeah. And the truth is, it was both. You do know me and you're full of shit.
Yeah. Well, that is true.
That's true.
But have you heard from him? I mean, he's been on NXT quite a bit.
We trade
what
are
your thoughts
now and again.
When do you think he's when do you think he might be able to be called up?
There's no way of knowing, because it's when the creative team has an idea for somebody. You know what I mean? He could be ready for 6 years and they don't think of something. Or he could be not even close to ready, and if they think of something, he's on the show. So I don't like predicting. He's a really good worker. That's the one thing that I do find frustrating. He's a really talented wrestler, and predominantly he's just been doing the gimmick. You know, like his... Again, as long as it's not the be-all and end-all of his existence, I think the gimmick's great. You know what I mean? It's like he's the self-absorbed... shallow guy that takes selfies of himself. You know, you can push the, hey, he's a model if you want. You don't even have to for the sake of the gimmick. He's just a guy that's full of himself and takes pictures of himself, and you can hate that. So it's as far as the gimmick goes, I think it's fine. As long as you let him work a little bit, because he's quite good. And I think on the next, is it TakeOver? The next NXT special. I think he's working with Sami Zayn. And, you know, if they give them, you know, got at least 10 minutes, but if they can give him 20, it's like it could be fantastic. Because a kid can really go.
Well, yeah, I mean, I actually love the gimmick. He kind of reminds me of, what was that movie, Zoolander, kind of?
Yep.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, in some ways. But, I mean, he's like, he actually has the perfect, like, I don't want to call it a smile, the smirk that he gives when he takes the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
That little smirk is just, it's so perfect for the gimmick. Even the picture I took with him, he's giving that little smirk where he's got like half his mouth is doing like another thing from the other half. I don't know how to explain, but it's actually really cool, man. So hopefully he'll get some time. And how proud are you every time when you see Emma come out on Raw, since I guess she's your first student to really make it to the main roster?
Yeah, she is, and I get asked this a lot, but it's like, I've been proud of her for years, you know what I mean? Like, I'm really happy she's made it there, but there's some people I've trained who are fantastic but may never make it there, but I'm every bit as proud of them because they're talented and they're great people, and so I've been proud of Emma for years because she really busts her hump, she's really talented, she's a really nice kid, so I've been proud of her for years. Now, it's an extra little cherry on the top that she's made the main roster. I think it's great. And I know she's doing the Australia tour coming up with WWE, and she's just thrilled to death about it. But again, much like I said with Tyler Breeze, you know, when they come up and if they come up, really, and it's the frustrating part of the wrestling business in that to the end of the be-all and end-all, the success of your career to a large extent, not entirely, can be on the whim of a creative process. That if they come up with a creative idea that they go, hey, this would be great, you can be on WrestleMania next year. Or if, for whatever reason, they're not coming up with something, they don't see whatever they should see in you, you can, you know, squander and get lost in the quagmire for decades. So, to me, I take pride in if they're good people, if they work really hard, and if, you know, they achieve and they reach a high level of skill. So I would have been every bit as proud of Emma if she didn't make the main roster. It's just a lot more satisfying, and you know, I'm happy for that she did achieve, you know, her dream, so to speak. And I'll be, you know, extra happy for Tyler Breeze or Sylvester Lefort or any of the other guys that I've worked with when and if they get that call up and they get to, you know, have that moment. Again, you know, Emma also had, you know, the first SWA grad to make WrestleMania. Including the teacher. So, you know, I was thrilled to death for her. But my pride in her and my affection for her preceded her making WWE.
Cool. Craig, go ahead, Craig.
I'm a little bit behind in my podcast, so I apologize. Did you actually see the last pay-per-view? Or quote-unquote pay-per-view?
No. The only thing I've seen of it is the clip of the cage match finish they showed on Raw.
Okay, so knowing what you know, what do you think about this whole feud?
I don't like it. But again, it's getting into the territory to a certain extent of a matter of taste. Or, you know, the flavor of ice cream, if you will, which is a common analogy WWE uses. And it should surprise no one that I'm a more meat and potatoes guy. You know, right. I like my serious wrestling. So the John Cena being afraid of the kid with the dubbed in voice and the, you know, the end of the world because his message will escape the cage if he escapes the cage. It's getting kind of hokey for me. So I'm not a big fan of it. And it's everyone has their line in the sand with artistic license. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we throw people off ropes and they come back. So, you know, there's a degree of artistic license in wrestling. And everybody has that point where they finally just go, ah, bullshit, too hokey. And, again, some people it's going to be when you send someone off the rope. And, you know, I listened to, you know, Les Thatcher last week, and he really hates the stalled vertical suplex because he thinks it's too fake. And it's like everybody's got their different line. And to me, getting into the apocalyptic promos and, you know, supernatural. And again, you know, are we supposed to believe that this kid actually had a possessed voice? Or are we just supposed to believe that somebody dubbed it in and he lip-synced it and John Cena fell for it? And it went too far into the we're making a horror film rather than doing a wrestling show. And
I was just about to say that. It's like that storyline and the Brian King storyline, it's like they're trying, it's like they hired some B horror movie script writers to write the last storyline.
Yeah, and I was actually just going to segue into the Kane thing as well. You know, when Steph leaves the locker room, it's like there's the Kane mask hanging on the back of the door. And it's like, well, in real life, would you care? Oh, there's a Kane mask hanging there. Someone must have left it from the merch table. And then I think the next time it was actually glowing, and it's like, are we supposed to think there's a supernatural force here, or did somebody put one of those little LED tea lights behind it? And again, it's to each their own and where you want your wrestling to go. And I still like to pretend that it's a sport and these are real people and the events that happen on the show can happen in real life. You know, that being said, though, the, you know, the Buried Alive matches, like I haven't had a big problem with those over the years, but are we really supposed to believe that we've been throwing Undertaker and Kane into these pits and filling them with sand? You know, so it's everyone has their line, and sometimes where mine is doesn't make sense, but they've crossed mine with the Bray Wyatt angle, and they've crossed my line with the Kane angle. But, again, for some reason, there's been other stuff that's been hokey as shit that I think is pretty damn cool, and I like it. So, but, yeah, the finish of the cage match was too much for me.
Now, speaking of crazy stuff, how have you not gone out of your way to watch the greatest match in the history of the WWE and all pro wrestling and watch the WLC match?
I haven't seen it. I don't know whether I'd like it or not. I might. I think it would depend on the mood I was in. That if I could just do the, you know what the hell, let's watch this, it might be funny. I might really enjoy it. Or I might just sit there and think it's, you know, the downfall of society. I don't know.
I think I can see it going either way.
Yeah, and the thing that I find, I guess it's sort of frustrating to an extent, is I guess it's Masquerita Dorada was his name before he became El Torito. I could be wrong on that, but it's like I met him when I was in NXT the last time, and it's like that dude can really go. You know what I mean? It's like he's really awesome, and it's like, and then I see him out there in a bull suit throwing candies to kids. And in the back of my head, it's like, I wonder what he thinks about this. Like, he might just think it's the greatest gig in the world and he's having fun. Or he might be thinking it's like, this is such a waste of my talents. And it's like, I don't know which it is, because the dude is, you know, it's, I've seen some of his Mexican stuff, and it's like, wow, that dude can go.
Yeah, he is actually, like, I mean, if you really broke it down for, like, pound to pound, I mean, the dude can do some incredible stuff. I mean, he really, really is that good. I would imagine he would be happy because I would imagine he's making more money now than he ever has.
Oh, entirely probable. But again, some people's motivation is money. Some people is, you know, love of your craft. And I actually talked to some of my students about this the one time when the Funkadactyls were just the Funkadactyls. And it's like, there might be two girls that just wanted to be on TV. And this is the greatest job in the world. They don't get beat up. They don't have to take bumps. They just get to go out and dance for 2 or 3 minutes. They're in front of, you know, 10,000 people. They're making good money. They're traveling the world. What an amazing job.
Yeah.
Unless they're wrestling fans that really wanted to be women wrestlers and they just want to get in the ring and do it, in which case it's got to be the most frustrating job in the world because they're not getting to.
Right.
So it really depends on what your goals are and what you really want to do. Because that used to come up with Don Callis, my buddy, you know, from Winnipeg, that was, you know, the Jackal, Cyrus, you know, Don Callis and TNA, when he was, you know, a manager and when he was, you know, just the network guy in ECW. There was a lot of guys. There was a lot of guys in ECW that, you know, they wanted to get in the ring. They wanted to do the wrestling. They had to take their bumps. and they'd be like, oh, man, that must really frustrate you. You don't get to have matches. And Don Callis would just look at him with the most confused look on his face. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? He wanted to be a part of the wrestling business. He wanted to be on television. But he was so happy to not have to take bumps. He's like, if I can go out here and make a living just running my mouth, he says, that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so he was thrilled to death. But there'd be guys, and again, I think I would use Steve Corino as an example. If he was just going to be a mouthpiece, I don't think he would have been happy because he really wanted to wrestle. But Don Callis just wanted to be a character. And again, it's what your goals are. And so depending on what, you know, the Funkadactyls' goals were, if Naomi wanted to be a wrestler, she's probably much happier now. But if she just wanted to be in the WWE and travel the world, you know, just being a Funkadactyl, you know, you're not going to end up with herniated discs in your back and separated shoulders and all the other hardship that comes with wrestling. She gets to have just the upside, if you would.
Now I wanted to go back to talking about the school. I know for a while back you were talking of how you were constantly having a bunch of Australians, and I was wondering, are you still getting that? Are a lot of your students still coming all the way from Australia?
I'm still getting a lot of interest from Australia. I think this is the first session in a while I haven't had at least one. There isn't an actual Australian in this class, and it's been a while since I've had a class without one. But I know I've got, because again, I'm dealing with emails for, you know, next year now, and I've got Australians booked in future classes and stuff, so I'm still getting interest from Australia. But this is the first session in a long time I haven't. I've got a guy from Scotland in this class. I think a guy from England in this class. I got a guy from Sweden, and I've got a couple Americans and a couple Canadians.
How many women are in the class this time?
I'll have two. I only had one, but I'm having one at, there's a new girl starting next week. She's going to be a week late. I ended up having a couple of no-shows this class, and just by a weird coincidence, I got an email the day before this class started with, I know this is ridiculously absurd. I know the next two classes are booked, but her personal schedule had changed, and I think she starts, you know, back at school in September, and it was just, is there any chance I could squeeze into this class that's just starting? And then I had a couple people just no-show out of the blue, so we had room to fit in an extra body, so I'm like, yeah, if you can be here ASAP, I can squeeze you in. And she's done a bit of training before, so missing the first week shouldn't have her behind the pack. So I'll have two girls as of Monday in this group.
How many girls do you usually average per class? I mean, like, what's the percentage of it?
I don't know if I could do. You know, I think the most I've ever had was three in a class, and there's been a lot of classes where there isn't any. So I don't know if I'm averaging one per or maybe even a hair under that. I maybe average, you know, average two or three girls per year. Sometimes it's a little higher than that, but sometimes it's probably a little lower than that. I have just one girl in the last class. I have two girls in the last class, and I'll have two in this one. So, maybe I'm averaging four or five girls a year at the most.
Okay. And do you treat the girls any differently than you treat the guys, or is it everyone gets the same treatment no matter what?
Well, there's little differences. Again, they're doing the same cardio drills we're doing. We cover most of the wrestling is the same. I have matches with them all the same. But there's a few different moves that girls tend to do that guys don't. There's a slight variation in a couple of the bumps that the girls take that, compared to what guys do. So there's a little bit of stuff that's different. I probably don't hit the girls as hard as I do some of the guys. But, you know, for the most part, everybody's treated the same because they've got to learn the same job. There's just a few different nuances to how they do things rather than guys. Where, again, obviously there's going to be a lot of, you know, moves where you're picking people up that girls don't tend to do because girls usually aren't as big and strong as guys. So there's slight variations, but on the whole, they're, you know, they're doing the job the same as everybody else.
Now, I've been watching a lot of, like, Shimmer and Shine, and if there's one thing I've noticed from a lot of girls is that there's one weakness that a lot of them have. Not all of them, some of them are really good at it, but is their striking, not their kicks. Their kicks are really good, but their punching and striking like that. How do you go about teaching the women how to strike or make them look better than it would normally look?
I think the one thing that I really try to do is, because I find with a lot of girls, they're afraid of hurting their opponent. And that's one of the nicest parts of when you get a mixed class, because it's like, when I'm in there wrestling, it's like, you're not going to hurt me, just hit me. And it's like, I think if you haven't been in fights and you haven't hit, it's hard to fake something you've never done for real. So I'll get them, it's like, just hit me, you know what I mean? And it's like, we'll make you look good, and then we'll worry about making you lighten up a little bit later. Because, you know, they're not going to hurt me. And that's one thing that I really harp on people that I think is some people miss out on. Is knowing the safe places you can hit people,
mm-hmm.
and teaching people to consistently hit your target. Because if you're consistently hitting your target, and your target is always safe places, if you hit them too hard, it doesn't matter, because they're not going to get hurt. But if you're, you know, reckless and careless, and you're aiming for the point of their chin, or you're aiming for the side of their, you know, the bridge of their nose, well, that's all great if you're 100% accurate and you're not stiff. But everybody screws up at one point in time or another, and that's when people get hurt. But, you know, there's safe places you can throw a forearm where even if you hit them really hard, they're going to be okay. And so I really harp on pick safe targets until you're 100% accurate, and then you can start worrying about, you know, hitting other places. And I find a lot of girls have trouble punching. There's not that many girls that have a good punch. I thought Mickey James had one of the better girl punches. But, again, I don't worry about that in that, especially if WWE is your goal, they're not a big fan of girls throwing punches. They would much rather the girls throw forearms. So I really focus on trying to finding the strike that they're good at, too, where, you know, experiment a little bit. You know, if you happen to have a good punch, great. If you don't, try to find a good forearm or try to throw a good whatever. You know, find a strike that looks good. Practice all of them till they look good, but at least when you're in front of a crowd, stick with the ones that are going to look best and go from there. But, once I you know, yell at them a few times and tell them to just hit me, then they finally do, and then they seem to get better at it.
Okay. Go ahead, Craig.
I don't know how to ask this. Did you see the video that came out this week, WWE put out about little Connor?
I did, yes.
I haven't had a good cry in a long time, and that helped that. I guess all the bad stuff we hear about the WWE, it was really cool to see something so amazing. Is that kind of the norm, and we just keep all the bad stuff, or what? You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I don't think it's the norm in that those situations don't arise, but I think it shows that, you know, WWE in, you know, particular, I think most people in general, they have a good heart. And, you know, it's one thing if, again, I'm worrying about my spot and it's like I might be a dick to you because you might take my spot. But it's like, you know, here's just a kid that's got, you know, a really shitty situation. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you'd have to be a pretty callous piece of garbage to not find some place in your heart going, you know, is there any way we can make this kid happy?
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought they did a great job. And I saw it on Facebook and I reposted it and even commented, because I've been critical to that I don't like the WWE with the, we put smiles on people's faces. You know, it sounds cheesy and stupid, but you know what? There are occasions when they genuinely do. And, you know, it was such a great thing, because you could just tell the kid was having the time of his life.
Right.
And the kid got shortchanged so much in the longevity of his life. It was so great to at least give him just complete joy and happiness for the little bit they did. And, you know, Hunter getting in there, it's like, hit me. And he's like, I don't want to hit you. And it's like he did, and Hunter took the bump from him. It's like, that's the kind of thing that, again, unfortunately he didn't get to keep that memory for a long period of time, but it's, you know, it stuck with him for every second of life he had. And it's just so great. And, again, so much credit to WWE for doing it. You know, they got him the ringside seats at WrestleMania. Daniel Bryan won't give a hug. And it's like, if you're not crying or at least getting misty-eyed watching that, then, you know, I think you really need to take a look at yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, and it was so nice to do it. And, you know, deep down, it's like, you know, they, you know, in a lot of cases, they do put smiles on people's faces, and it was really great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm glad they did it, and, you know, the kid was certainly really happy, so it was really touching. I thought it was a fantastic little video.
Absolutely.
No, you mentioned, like, the commercial they do, and they, to me, I think they've only, like, just done that recently, like, maybe the past year or so, where they kind of promoted it a little more. You didn't usually hear about it a lot, but how active are they with charities like Make-A-Wish and Special Olympics? I remember there was like a WrestleMania where they had like, they must have had 100 guests there. Like, you know, we don't always hear about it, but how, I don't know if as a wrestler you would know, but like how often do they like, you know, take care of these people at the shows or stuff like that? I mean, is it like a main directive or is it just something that's just, you know,
I don't know if it's a main directive, but it's certainly something they try to do. Like, obviously, Make-A-Wish, they're a big part of. Now, again, part of that is because it's very easy for WWE. You know what I mean? They travel to most cities around the world, and it makes it very cheap for Make-A-Wish, where, again, if a Make-A-Wish kid wants to meet whoever, it's like, you know, if they have to fly this kid to wherever this celebrity is to meet, it's a big ordeal, and a lot of these kids can't travel. But with WWE, it's so fantastic because inside of the next 8 months, they're going to come to you. So WWE plays a big part in that because, hey, there's kids in San Francisco. Well, we're in San Francisco in a month. Is there anybody they'd like to meet one of our WWE guys? And they'll do it. So they do take a big part in that because, and again, it's not just that it's easy, but it's something good you can do. It fits into their schedule. So they send a lot of people to, you know, sick kid hospitals and stuff. And I don't know who the person is that organizes it, but it's just that ability to, we're in San Diego. Is there something nice we can do in San Diego while we're there? And, again, there may be part of the motivation that it's good publicity for them. But I think deep down, everybody likes doing that. And it's the same thing when, you know, even if you're just at a house show somewhere and it's not even organized. And, you know, even if it's just, you know, Jimmy Security happens to notice that there's, you know, a couple kids in a wheelchair that are, you know, having a hard time getting a good seat. It's like, you know what, hey, let's see if we can get them backstage. If you guys can say hi, give them a T-shirt. And it's just, it's so easy to do. And, you know, I think the world is just such a better place. If you can do something nice and you don't have to go out of your way to do it, why wouldn't you?
Yep.
And so I've actually got a... It's a buddy of mine I met when I did that wrestling retribution project in California. I don't even know how he was involved. He just did a bit part. He wasn't a wrestler. And he's I follow him on Twitter. And he's part of – he's got a rake campaign, Random Acts of Kindness Everywhere. And it's just such a great concept. And it's like, you know what? There's so many people that are less fortunate than us. If there's the opportunity we're in their town, let's do it. And, you know, WWE has been doing more and more of it. I was never a top guy, so I didn't do a whole lot of it. You know, they usually sent people a little bit more higher up the card. I mean, I was also a heel. But I think most towns where you go, if they can coordinate a, hey, let's send Rey Mysterio to the school. Hey, let's send this kid to a Special Olympics thing. I think the Make-A-Wish thing, I think it was 52. I think they did one person from every state and flew them in as part of Make-A-Wish at one of the WrestleManias. They had Raven. Raven Simone, I think her name is. She had a That's So Raven TV show. She came into the game and was part of it. And it's, again, I'd like to think more corporations would do it if they could. It's just an easy way to make a positive difference. And if WWE gets a little bit of publicity for it, you know, more power to them because, the, you know, the difference it makes for these kids is so much more than the difference it makes for their PR.
Now, okay, we're talking about, like, the good stuff, and there's other stuff that they do that I guess they think they're doing good, but I know you're not a fan of it. I know your friend Paul Lazenby is definitely not a fan of it, but What are your thoughts when they do the Susan, when they go pink for the month?
I'm not a big fan of it. But again, I don't think, and that's the real frustrating part. I think everyone that does it, they have good intentions.
Yeah.
But I don't think enough people look into enough of the charities and what is going on to realize that perhaps you're not doing good. And I'm far more forgiving than Paul Lazenby is, but Paul Lazenby actually lost his wife to some of this blind obedience. So I can see where he has a far lower tolerance for it than me. I'm willing to write it off as, well, they're naive, they mean well. And Paul looks at it, it's like, well, you mean well, but if you're doing harm, you're still doing harm. And it's like that with a lot of charities. And cancer charities are among the absolute worst. Because actually Paul commented, I posted that that Connor video. And, you know, Paul was like, yeah, kudos for what they did for this kid, but, you know, shame on them for all the damage they do to all the others. And I'm like, whoa, what is this about? And
yeah.
It's just the, and again, I'm certainly not holding WWE accountable for this. I think it's, you know, society in America on the whole that, again, he's just, you know, the fruity pebbles that they push on people. It's like, you know, it's GMO. A lot of the sugars and dyes they use in it are actually cancer-causing. You know what I mean? And, again, I don't know if it's fruity pebbles specifically, but there's a lot of these sugary cereals and stuff that have known carcinogens in them. You know, they've got GMOs in them, and Paul's very anti-GMO, as am I. And so the way he looks at it, and the way I look at it to an extent, it's like you're promoting harmful products. But, again, I'm also, you know, I think aspartame is incredibly bad and unhealthy for you. So if you're promoting Diet Coke and, you know, you're promoting Diet Pepsi, it's like, to me, you're promoting harmful products. But they're all acceptable, legal, sellable, promotable products. And it's like, I don't expect WWE to turn down sponsorship dollars because, you know, well, the sweetener they use in here, I'm not really a big fan of, and I think it's harmful, but it's, you know, it's FDA approved as a legal product. I'm not going to hold them accountable for investigating every product and every sponsorship deal they have to go, okay, is there anything in this that might not be good for people? Is there anything in this that might be carcinogenic? Because even there was just that case not too long ago that Coke, the caramel syrup that they use in Coke, it contains known carcinogens in it. Because they had to reduce the levels of it because California required them to label it as a cancer-causing product. So they lowered the level of caramel-colored syrup in it, only in California, to the level that it could be underneath, and they didn't have to label it as carcinogenic anymore. And, again, that's where Paul gets up on his soapbox, and rightfully so. You know, we keep saying we need to do something to fight cancer, and it's like, yeah, but all these products that are put pink ribbons on it are the things that are causing the cancer you're trying to fight. It's like, oh, yeah, but it's a low enough level. It's like, yeah, but it's in every single thing we eat. Why do you think cancer levels have been going up despite the hundreds of millions of dollars we keep donating to these silly causes? Because we're not actually, we're not looking at the cause. We're just trying to make patentable medications that we can sell to people.
Yep.
But again, it's getting into a little bit of a deep conversation that's not particularly wrestling related.
Well, so we run off on all kinds of different things. But Craig, go ahead, Craig.
Oh, goodness. I was in deep thought about that. It reminded me of, and to continue this deep conversation, I think it was Powerade just recently had to reduce one of their one of the chemicals that they put in there because the thing was actually flammable.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just something real small, and Coca-Cola owns them, and they were getting ribbed because obviously with the new Coke that they came out with years ago failed so miserably, and then they changed the recipe of Powerade, which is kind of ironic. Anyway.
Speaking of that, didn't Subway also just do something like that with their bread?
Yeah, there was the ingredient in it that makes it nice and spongy, so when you squish the bread, it bounces back nice, was the same chemical used in yoga mats.
That's right.
And somebody found out about it. And again, the levels of rubber foam, for lack of a different term, that was in the bread was low enough, because again, I think it's considered either carcinogenic or poison or something bad for you, but the levels were low enough that the FDA allows it. So it was legal to put the crap in your bread, but somebody found out about it and went, wait a minute, we're eating stuff in yoga mats? So they took it out, or they're in the process of taking it out. I think it has to be out by 2016 or something. Or it may be out already, I don't know. But yeah, Subway had it in their bread. But there's a lot of breads, because my wife saw it, and she's like, oh my God, that's terrible. And she was looking at the grocery store, and it's like, a lot of the buns that you buy at the grocery store and stuff have it in it as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of really bad stuff in our food. And the more you look into it, like, again, if I'm making something or, I've created a new sweetener or something, to get it approved by the FDA, it's my job to show them data that it's okay. So you've got bias testing and bias samples where, as long as I can come up with a test that it doesn't look like it's any more damaging than anything else, they'll approve it. Like, FDA doesn't actually investigate the food. It's the responsibility of the people trying to sell you the crap. Much like the drug companies, they have to come up with some tests that it's not going to kill you, and then they go, oh, okay, I guess it's okay because you told us it was, and then they allow you to consume it.
Now, you just mentioned yoga mats a second ago, so I have to bring this up. Now, I have to thank you for help convincing me to start PDP yoga. It's helped me lose weight. It's made me feel physically better than I have in 20 years. But I do have to say that for about 15 to 20 minutes after I do the diamond cutter, I just want to punch you in the face, Lance.
Yeah, it took me a lot of coaxing to do it too, because it is a little bit cheesy. You know, he's given a lot of the yoga moves wrestling names. And, you know, DDP is a little bit of a cheesy guy. And if you're willing to try it, I'll send it to you. I'm like, okay, because I didn't want to say no, you know, because I like Dallas. So he sent it to me, and then it did sit on my shelf for a couple of months. I'm like, you know, I look at the booklet, and it's that Positively Page motivational guy. And I'm like, this is cheesy as hell. But then I got Jericho. No, you really need to try it. You really need to try it. It's like, I swear to God, this saved my life. And I'm like, well, I told the guy I would do it. So I sucked it up and actually put the damn thing in to do it the one day. And it's a hell of a workout. It really is. And I've been doing it for
It's not the cheesiness that bugs me. It's the fact that the diamond cutter exercise just kicks the living hell out of me. I mean, I am so damn tired. By the time because it's almost an hour, you know.
Yeah, it's like 50 minutes, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I can do everything but Road Warrior 3, or the one where you're like
the one leg.
That
we go up on your one foot, yeah.
But, I can even do Side Plank 3, you know, with the leg up and stuff. DDP was really smart by putting that really big guy on the diamond cutter, the guy doing the modifications, because I was like struggling, but then I'm looking, I go, man, if this guy can do it, I can do it, damn it. And it kind of just forced me to like do everything from the very first time I did it. But it still just, it kills me.
Well, I think the thing that's really important, and it's a really good in that regard that, like you say, it's like he's got his modified spot, and I think Dallas does a great job of, you know, just step it in, and it's like, you can make it as easy or as hard as you want. You know what I mean? And the same thing with, you know, the dynamic resistance end of it. You know, if you don't put any dynamic resistance in, you'll get through it. If you really work hard, it's like it'll kill anybody. And I'm obviously, you know, in pretty good shape. I have been my whole life. So, like, when I'm done the thing, it's like I'm not dead. I'm not exhausted. But there are a few parts of it that are harder. Because that side plank thing where you put your foot out, I can't do that. I don't know whether it's my upper body or it's just my shoulders are too shot. But having that much weight on my shoulder just hurts like hell. So I don't put that foot out there. I keep my knee down because it just bothers my shoulder. And that's what I like about the workout is it's like it doesn't matter which the exercise is, you can always do the other level of it if it bothers you. And, you know, the Road Warrior 3 up in the 1 foot, it's like I couldn't do that the first time. My balance was just brutal. But, you know, my balance has improved a ton. Like my buddy at the gym, he can't believe how good my balance is now. And it's like, because I don't do it a lot now, especially because my mom snagged two of my DVDs. I kept the one. She wanted to try it, so it's like, well, I need the Diamond Cutter one. I'll give you the stand-up and the early easier ones. But, you know, you do that stand-up one where it's like you got to stand on 1 foot and grab the bottom of your foot and extend your leg. You know, I'm falling into walls. It's like I can't stand on 1 foot, but I can now. And
awesome.
And I don't notice as big a difference as Jericho did or a lot of other guys, because I didn't have that debilitating injury, you know what I mean, where you get the three herniated discs and you can't even walk and then you feel better. But I did have minor lower back problems when I retired. And they've been fixed for the most part, but I still, on occasion, my hip will really tighten up and I'll have some sciatic nerve issue. Like if I lay too much on my back, I do get a little numbness in my one leg, because I've got sciatic nerve issue on my one side. It's a case where before I started DDP yoga, there was probably at least a couple times a week, four or five on a bad week, but at least a couple times a week where it would tweak and tighten up, and you could tell by the way I was standing or when I walked, there'd be a slight limp because it was just bothering me. And see, I've been doing the DDP yoga pretty consistent for the last 3, maybe 4 months. I think I might have had one occasion where that's happened in the last 4 months rather than a couple times a week. Just, you know, my core is a little bit stronger, my balance is better, and it's also a good workout. And the one thing I've done, too, with the Diamond Cutter in particular, because I've done the Trish Stratus yoga, too, which I like, and she's got these fit gloves that are, like, I think 1 or 2 pounds each. They've got lead shot in the back of the glove, and I'll do the Diamond Cutter with those. So all of the exercises where you're reaching out with your arm, you got this 2-pound or 1-pound weight on it, and I get a much better upper body pump, like in my shoulders and stuff, get a hell of a lot more of a workout because my hands are weighted. So I've added a bit more resistance in that regard to up the level of the workout a bit. But the zero impact is tremendous for my knees. It's a really great workout.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I just feel like so much looser, like sometimes after the, you know, my night at UPS, I'd just would be dead and just like hurting everywhere, and I don't feel like that anymore. You know, I'm amazed at how much it's, you know, just made me feel better in general since I've been doing it.
Yeah, although I got to admit, I always feel like a tool doing the showstopper bicep curls.
By the time I get to those, I have to concentrate just to keep my arms all the way up because they're usually dead by that time.
But, yeah, that's the great part, though. And it's like, you know, as you get in better shape, you can just add a bit more resistance or step a little deeper into your lunge. And there's, again, what's Paige say? There's always another place to go, always another level to go. There's always a way you can step it up or step it down if you need to.
Yeah. Now we just need to get Craig to do it.
There you go.
I've got it. I've got it, so I do. Yeah, I just got to take it out of the box.
There you go. And then we can all laugh at Brian. Then we can all laugh at Brian because he just does his slow flow granny's yoga.
Well, the funny thing is,
I remember that one time where he said that yoga wasn't like a workout one time, and I'm like, he definitely hasn't done the Diamond Cutter. That's what he said.
Yeah, no kidding. Or again, I'm going to sometime soon try the Double Black Diamond, which I guess is the next one up. I haven't been brave enough to give it a go yet, but that'll be my next step.
Yeah, Paul mentioned that to me. He's like, wait till you get to this one, and I'm like, I think I'm quite a ways away. I want to be able to do my goal is to do the Diamond Cutter every day for like 5 days, but I can't do it. It's like if I do it and I have to take the next day off, but that's my goal, is to be able to do it every day.
Just keep working.
But you've been on for over an hour, Lance, so I guess we'll go ahead and wrap out. We don't want to keep you too long. But, Craig, if you want to throw out any last questions before we go?
Got anything coming up, Lance? Any bookings? Any You're not booked on the next Extreme Rising show, are you?
No, I am not. Nor the Hardcore Road one in London that was a disaster. I am doing House of Hardcore 6. It's in the San Diego area. I know the building isn't in San Diego, but that's the airport I'm flying into, and it's near there. House of Hardcore 6, June 14th. There's a big meet-and-greet fan-festy thing during the day that I'm a part of, and then there'll be the show that evening. That's June 14th. And then the other thing that I'm doing is the Mid-Atlantic Legends Fan Fest in Charlotte, North Carolina, July 31st to August 3rd. I'm really excited about that one because there's a lot of people that are going to be there that I haven't seen in a while, Les Thatcher being one of the primary people I'm excited to see. I'm pretty sure Hurricane's going to be there as part of the Fan Fest thing. I just saw Karma's going to be there, and I've only met her once, and she was really sweet, and we didn't get a chance to talk too much, so I'm looking forward to seeing her again. So that's NWALegends.com, I think, is where you can find information. I'm part of the four-day Tom Pritchard four-day training camp. I think there's a Reed Flair scholarship to the top student, and it's Les, myself, Jerry Briscoe, Dr. Tom, and Nigel McGuinness doing the instructing. So if you,
wow,
you can't learn something from us, you really just need to go do something else for a living.
Tremendous.
Now, speaking of Les Thatcher, I love Les. He's so awesome. And I the thing that always pops in my head is that MTV thing he did a while back, the one with Hunter in China and Tony Atlas. And have you ever had to give a student the same speech that Les did on that show?
I never saw the show, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, well, there's like, they have a class, and they got like, they focus on two students, one guy who's like willing to do everything, and then the one guy who shows up, and he wants to be a wrestler, but he doesn't work at it. And supposedly he was at a bar, and he was telling people he was a wrestler already before he was like really, really trained, and Les just took him in the ring and just went off on him for telling people he was a wrestler when he wasn't a wrestler yet, and basically said that. He said something like, "I'll show you. You're not a wrestler." Like basically, kind of threatening the guy, in a way. I mean, not really, but in a way, he kind of was. And it was awesome, actually. I mean, it was just like you're just wanting this old man to just beat the shit out of this young punk. And if you could ever find it, I think you'd enjoy, especially Les's part. Les was just, he was great on it.
Oh, no, I'll have to try to check it out. No, I've been lucky. Everyone that's been through my school yet, touch wood, has been very respectful and worked really hard. There's been a few that I've had to sit down and I've sat down and told them that I didn't think this industry was for them. But everybody's been pretty decent. I think the only, actually, just think about it, I did have one again. It was after he left. I had one student that he'd worked before, and I think he really just wanted to add my name to his resume because I think the first time I really criticized his work, he stopped showing up. He'd be, I'm sick, I'm doing something else. And he really made less than a third of the class and then went back home and was telling everybody he was a graduate of my school and was upping his price on the indies and, you know, claiming to be the top student. And I had said these great things about him. And I ended up having to post a thing on my website calling him out by name, just telling everybody that I wouldn't really be able to recommend his work because I didn't see any of it because he didn't attend enough classes.
Awesome. That is pretty cool. Well, we really appreciate you taking your time. I know you're busy. It's a new session and everything, and thank you for coming on. And I do have to bug you about one last thing before we go, and that is I've kind of left you alone this year, but, you know, there's this other thing in July going on in Las Vegas that, you know, you're welcome to come hang out at.
Eventually, sometime I will make it. I don't think this year will be the one. That's the hard part for me. As a married man, I always have to justify where I spend my vacation time and my money. And this year it was a Hawaii trip with my wife for our 20th wedding anniversary, which was day before yesterday.
That's right.
And we will eventually try to make it down, both me and my wife. I'd like to go with her that way. It's going to be a lot more fun. I think she can tolerate some of you guys for a short period of time.
Yeah, and there's actually quite a like other women that go. It's not just all just a bunch of nerdy geeks, you know.
Whitney usually goes, doesn't she?
Who?
Yeah.
Doesn't Whitney usually go?
Yes.
Oh yeah, Whitney goes. Bridget goes. Granny goes. There's actually quite a bit.
Yeah, it's because I know Tina gets along really well with Whitney, so that'll be enough of a seller that she'd be willing to go. So.
Yeah, and then like you know, it's not all you know UFC. You know, we do like the Circus LA shows and stuff like that. So we have like the mini golf tournament. So you know, when you guys can make it, I'm sure you guys will enjoy it, even if you have to put up with a few geeks.
Not naming any names, right, Ed?
Yeah. Well, of course I met Brian Alvarez, but.
Yeah, of course. I'm still trying to guilt his ass up here in July. So.
Yeah. Well, aren't you going to be in their neck of the woods here in a month or so? When's Vinny's wedding?
Yeah, well, we don't. I think Vinny's stooged off the date, but yeah, I'm coming to the wedding. Just me though. Tina's not coming, so I will see. And any of you that are attending the Vinny wedding, I will see everybody then. And I do have dibs on bouncing Brent should he crash.
I got second.
I actually wanted to go, was hoping I could go, but it was all depending on when I was going to get this back paycheck from UPS, and it's just not getting, it didn't get in on time. So I'm unfortunately going to have to miss Vinny's wedding. But I hope you guys have a good time, and I hope everything works out. And like I say, once again, Matt, appreciate you coming on, and have a good night, and hopefully we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Lance.
Cool. Thank you.
Bye.
Cool. Well, I guess I forgot to draw the plug on the live feed, but
yeah.
It's okay. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Mark Show and a whole lot of other ones. You can also download and stream our show at blogtalkradio.com/Petrer and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo. And you can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. And if you are planning on going to Vegas, please check out our Facebook page of the F4W/Wrestling Observer Vegas Convention. Check that out. We got all the info there. Pretty much everything set up or ready to be set up or whatever. So, yeah, check that out. And go ahead, Craig.
All right. You can follow me at Twitter. That's properjam, P-R-O-P-E-R-J-A-M. On Twitter, everything music and wrestling related, I do there. So follow me there. Also need to speak with Ed about moving the show next week as I am going to yet another Pearl Jam function. So stay tuned for that.
Oh, man, you and your Pearl Jam. But, we can discuss that.
Yeah.
Give me some ideas on when's good, and then I'll see if they work for me. And
awesome.
So yeah, just post it on the thing and let us know. We'll see what we can do. But everybody, come back next week. We may or may not be on the same day. We'll see what happens. So everybody, come back next week, and we will talk to everybody then.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. Found out how good you are. You're looking at the matrix shit. Let's go hook him up.
Oh, here about our heads of heads of a K-4. Terry Buck has gone crazy. Buck has gone crazy. Watch the open eyes.
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
It's time. You take it all away.
I'm gonna drag you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.